From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, June 13th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheese. Hawa. Toyoksuk Newsom. Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, Dirty Cello is playing the Gold Town tonight. They are a down-home blues rock Americana band that features cello like you've never heard it before. The Alaska Theater Festival from Theater Alaska continues with a Not Your Grandma's version of Pride and Prejudice opening next week. And the City Museum has walking tours and exhibitions for your summer exploration. Those conversations plus a new Curious Juno coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
As your community-supported news source, KTOO is always guided by our public service mission to deliver facts and perspectives, bridge divides, promote shared values, and strengthen connections. It's what we've always done. So no matter what the news is tomorrow, KTOO will be here for you with trusted coverage you and your neighbors can count on. Your membership support makes it all possible. With our fiscal year closing out on June 30th, we encourage you to make sure your membership is up to date at ktoo.org.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Is a Dirty Cello. Why don't you both come over here and sit down at these microphones there. This is Juno Afternoon on your community-supported station, KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tonight at the Gold Town, you will hear what you just heard, Dirty Cello. They have toured from Iceland to Italy and all over the U.S. They bring high energy and a unique spin on blues, rock, and Americana. And Gunnath Cheese for Rebecca Rodman and Jason Eckel for joining me in studio now. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Of course. It's so nice to have you here. So Dirty Cello, where does that name come from? We get a sense of it in the music, but where's the band originate?
Well, I started the cello when I was 7 years old, and it was all about classical music. And so I was a music major in college, and I got into professional orchestras in California, which is where we're from. And then I decided when to let my hair down, do something a little different. And so I wanted to create a band that was the complete opposite of classical music. And when you think of classical music, you think of very clean playing. So that's why we're called Dirty Cello.
Yeah, I love that. And so how did you get involved in, was it your parents that got you into sort of playing the cello when you were younger?
For sure. So my mom is a piano teacher. And when I was 6 and a half, she put me on the piano. And then she wanted to give me the harp to play.
Oh, my.
But we didn't have a big enough car. But if we had, you'd be talking to me as a dirty harpist. But so then she decided to give me the cello. I didn't know what it was, but I said yes, and I'm really glad I did.
Wow, that's so great. But you obviously had influence from your youth in sort of the rock and roll and blues and Americana. And so when did you decide to sort of like take this form?
It actually started, I think, with a little talent show. It was called Vallejo's Got Talent, and it was in the basement of a bookstore.
Oh, wow.
And I played a rock tune, which I had never done before. And I ended up winning first place, which was really great. Although there was, in second place, was a 12-year-old girl singing Disney songs. But so after the concert, I had people come up to me and say, hey, can I buy your CD of rock cello? And I said, that is the only song I know. So after that, I realized I might have a good thing going. And so Jason and I just started performing together, and we would do it in like little cafes, and we'd play for pastries, not even for money. And we started getting a following, and we thought, okay, we have something here. And so then it just flourished from there.
I love that. And Jason, you play the guitar.
But only for this group. I'm a classical flute player. We met in music school and conductor by training. And we were like, okay, we're forming this band. What would be the most useful thing to play? And that's how I ended up on guitar.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. So you're in other bands where you are doing classical flute?
Not as much anymore. This has kind of really taken over.
I see. Yeah. Okay. And where did you start in terms of your musical journey?
High school marching band playing flute because it was cheaper to rent than the saxophone.
And that was smaller to carry.
Yeah,
I guess,
that was the whole thing.
Can you imagine? I mean, a saxophone in this group would probably work out pretty good too, right?
Well, we need the loudest thing to be the cello, so that it might be too loud.
That's true. You give them a solo once in a while, maybe, you know, but it's all good. And how do you decide on which tunes you're going to put into the repertoire? Is there something about, let's say, a rock song or Americana song that you know will fit the cello better than some?
Whatever has an amazing, like, fun guitar solo, I really like to go after those on the cello. So if you're expecting like a guitar soloing tonight, it's going to actually be taken over by me on the cello, or anything that's just really fun. So like we just played Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
I obviously admire Jimi Hendrix very much and all his soloistic way of approaching things. So that's what attracted me to that song. But we'll also do songs from things that have happened in our life. So you'll hear some of our originals. But I should add, everything is fun, energetic, and we don't take ourselves seriously and have a lot of fun.
Yeah. And is this your first time to Juno?
It is. And we are so excited. We got here a couple days ago and have been really enjoying taking hikes and things like that. And so we're very excited to play the Gold Town.
Well, you have come at a good time. The weather has been, you've been blessed by the weather, as we say. It rains. It usually, these are the kind of the good months. So you came at the best time.
Perfect.
And are you going on other places? It's like a little mini Alaska tour.
That's exactly what it is. Definitely a mini Alaska tour. We're going to Palmer next, which I heard is near Anchorage.
Yes.
And the great thing about this is we are playing
at an unconventional place. We're playing at a musk ox farm.
Oh, I know the musk ox farm.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And then we're playing another show. It's at the Writer's Block Bookstore. It's in Anchorage. And we're playing with our klezmer band, the San Francisco Yiddish Combo. So we've got three shows on this little mini tour, and then we're back to San Francisco.
And then you're back. Okay, that's where you're based mostly, is San Francisco.
Yeah.
And how often do you get out on the road? Is it a lot? Is it?
This summer, so the 3 months of summer, I think we're going to spend something like 20 days at home.
Oh,
wow. So we get back, we have a few festivals at home, then we turn around and head for the San Juan Islands, and then we get back, and then we head for Idaho, and we get back, and it kind of continues like that all the way up to mid-October, where we're hitting Singapore and then Bali.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Bali sounds really fun.
Yeah.
So in the music sphere, I'm just curious, like, are there other folks doing this style of music? I know there's like, Simply Three was just here. Simply Three, I think, mm-hmm. is. Yeah. And they were just here for the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. Sort of similar in a way, like they take the violin and they do like a lot of, not so much rock, they do more like pop, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
But like, are there other people sort of taking this cello and busting it open like this? Because that sounded so cool what you were doing there in terms of playing a Jimi Hendrix solo on the cello.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's the two famous ones.
Yeah. The two cellos.
Two cellos.
Yeah.
And then there's a guy named Joey. And that pretty much sums it up.
that was the list.
Yep, there it is.
And is it, do you think it, why is that? Is it because it's, is it so unique that it's hard for people to get into it?
No, or? I'm going to actually toot Rebecca's own horn for her. So, you know, you wail on a guitar and it has frets, right?
Yeah.
As long as your fingers within a half an inch to an inch, you're good to go. But on cellos, violins, things like that, there's not a fret in sight. So every crazy thing she has to do has to be a micro muscle memory. And she's just flying. So when you come to see us, it's a visual thing to watch her just work around the fingerboard. So anything a guitar does is 10 times harder on the cello.
Oh.
So that's why it's so removed, plus being heard, getting all the electronics right to play with a rock band.
Right.
You know, cello is not a loud instrument. So there's some technical stuff, both in how she plays and technical stuff in being heard, that is really kind of insurmountable for a lot of folks.
You were doing this here in our studio on what we lovingly call our red carpet stage.
Mm-hmm.
Using the Ear Trumpet Labs Myrtle, but sometimes, and that's just that microphone that's mm-hmm. used there, which is great. It's one of those great room mics. But do you have to plug in the cello so to be able to get over, in terms of volume, to get louder?
Always.
Yeah, usually we're a 5 or 6 piece band with drums and everything, and there's electronics everywhere and monitors and this and that. Tonight it'd be a slightly more stripped down thing, but we will still be all plugged in and everything.
Yeah, that's so cool. And so let me just ask this: what are some of your favorite tunes to play? What's your favorite solo to play, Rebecca?
Oh, favorite solo to play. You know, I do love Guns N' Roses' "Sweet Child of Mine."
This is what I was thinking of. That's one of the best. I mean, because that one's so interesting. Because it has the two guitars and like that solo section in there, it starts as one. It was Izzy who did the first one, and then Slash comes in with that second solo that a lot of people probably recognize, but it's like you don't even know that it's building like that. So how do you tackle that as a cellist?
I should say I take more inspiration from it from anything else. So kind of like Jason was saying, how the guitar and the cello are so different.
Yeah.
I take the foundation of that and then I make it my own.
I
never like to copy what they're actually doing in the original. I like to completely make it Dirty Cello's way of doing it.
Right. That's smart. But it was so funny because once you were talking about solos, that's the first song that came to my mind. I mean, that's my era, right?
There
I mean,
you
that's
go.
That's the one from college that we all know and love. It's so cool. And so let's see. What else do I want to ask you? I want to ask you how we get tickets for tonight.
Well, there's only a few left. So dirtycello.com, DirtyCello.com. And like I said, there's only a handful left. It's possible you could get it at the door, but hopefully we won't be sold out.
I'm sure Colette will try to find a way to get everybody in that wants to see the show. It starts at 7 o'clock tonight. Mm-hmm. You also had a Bit.ly link, which I think might take you directly to, is that the Gold Town page as well?
If you click on the Gold Town page, there's a ticket link.
bit.ly/dirtycello_Juno. But the best thing to do is go to dirtycello.com. So you can see they have videos up there of other songs that they're doing. They have, other links to their music that they have, different records that they've made, all that good stuff. It's really great to welcome you to Juno. What a great sound. And would you mind playing one more song as we get out? So I'll let you get up to the microphones onto our red carpet stage as I give you the details one more time. It's Dirty Cello tonight at the Gold Town, 7 o'clock start time. And you can find out more at dirtycello.com. One more time, here is Dirty Cello. Ticket right there. Dirty Cello tonight at the Gold Town. Gwyneth Cheese for coming in. Thank you so much. Up next, Theater Alaska presents a new fresh adaptation of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. That's next on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. But first, this week's Curious Juno.
Spanning an outside wall of City Hall in downtown Juno, there's a 10.5 by 61 foot mural called Raven Discovering Mankind in a Clamshell. It shows Raven opening a clamshell and releasing a man. Around it, there's Alaska Native clan symbols like the bear, the frog, the eagle, the orca, and the wolf. A vibrant blue and cloudy sky fills the background. It's one of the first things cruise ship passengers see, and KTOO listener Shirley Dean says it's one of her favorite pieces of art in Juno.
It just brings me delight with the colors and the whole image of the beginning. And it just brings me peace and joy because in the winters, as you know, when it's really dark and gray and rainy, those colors just make me happy.
During the local election last fall, Dean wondered what would happen to the mural if voters approved the city's plan to build a new city hall. That ballot measure failed, but the city still plans to move its staff to a new location one day. Dean asked KTOO to find out what would happen to the building and mural if that happened.
You know, I don't know how they can do it, but if we can put people on the moon, I think we could preserve an art piece.
So first, some history. The mural was painted in 1986 by then-local artist Bill C. Ray. Now, nearly four decades later, it's showing its age. Paint is chipping and colors are fading. When I reached out to him to talk about the mural, he declined an interview. But in old newspaper articles, Ray said the mural was inspired by a carving by the late Bill Reed, a renowned Haida artist from British Columbia. It tells the Haida legend of how man came to be. Ray's not Alaskan native, but in the article, he explains the legend like this. Raven was flying around and landed on a beach to dine on some shellfish. He had his fill and then was just about to take off when he saw a giant clam under the sand. He dug it out, popped it open, and squirming inside was man. Gary Wade was the model for the man, and recently we met in front of the mural.
Gary?
Hi.
Hey, nice to meet you. I'm Clarice. It's so great to finally meet you in person.
Wade is Tlingit and Haida and has lived in Juneau his whole life. He's 78 now, so he was in his 30s when Ray painted him.
Well, yeah, early 30s, just got the acting career going. That was quite the time.
Standing next to the mural now, Wade looks different. His hair is short and white instead of black and flowing, and he looks like he's seen some things since popping out of that clamshell. Wade says if he had known back then how iconic the piece would become in Juneau, he would have made a few requests.
Boy, I should have had residuals in some way or another on this stuff. Somehow.
Though he frequents downtown and drives past City Hall often enough, Wade has an interesting relationship with the mural. He doesn't like to look at it.
It's like being in a movie or in a play that gets recorded. Don't really like watching oneself do the thing.
But he says the mural serves an important purpose. When he was young, public art depicting Alaska Native culture wasn't common like it is today. He says he isn't attached to the mural itself so much as its ability to share his culture through the story it tells.
We got the story from the elders. Tell this story to as many people as you can and pass it on. So any which way that the story gets passed on, I'm all for it.
He says he really doesn't care so much if the mural is preserved or destroyed, as long as something similar takes its place. But what will happen to City Hall and the mural is still unclear.
Where we are going to eventually end up moving downtown employees is a question that's still up in the air.
That's city manager Katie Kester. She says she's in the middle of negotiating a lease for two floors of the Michael J. Burns Building downtown, which houses the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The city has been trying to figure out a long-term plan for staff after Juneau voters rejected two separate bond proposals for a new city hall. Right now, fewer than half of the city's employees work at City Hall, which has issues like cracking walls, leaking ceilings, and asbestos in the carpet. The rest of the employees work in rented office spaces in other buildings. So if City Hall does get emptied out, the Juneau Assembly will decide what happens to the building. Kester says the city had a photographer take high-quality photos of the mural in 2011. Potentially, those could help recreate the piece in the future.
I do think there's a real desire to preserve that iconic piece of Juneau. I mean, every photograph. In fact, I was walking over here and people were taking pictures of that mural. So it's really come to represent Juneau, and it's just a beautiful story and a beautiful piece.
So for now, the mural will continue to greet visitors of Juneau, and Wade will just keep having to drive past his big face downtown. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This summer is the fourth annual Alaska Theater Festival from the group Theater Alaska. It's got music in the form of neighborhood cabarets, another installment in the Climate Fair for a Cool Planet, plus theater workshops and more. The main summer play is an adaptation of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. Adapted by Kate Hamill, this is billed as Not Your Grandma's Pride and Prejudice. It runs June 19th through July 14th, which means it opens next week at various locations around town. For the full schedule of events, visit theateralaska.org. That's theater with an E-R spelling. And joining me now in the studio are Floridolino Lagandino, Artistic Director of Theater Alaska, as well as actors Christina Apathy, Brian Crowder, and Natalia Spengler. And full disclosure, I am also in this play as well.
Yeah.
Gonna cheese for being here today, y'all. How's it all? How you doing? Wasa yeti.
What's up?
Where are we in the process? What's happening? Don't be shy.
So we're about a week out from our first public performance. And, you know, we're at that stage where things are coming together. We're getting costumes tonight. We've got sound going on. We're outside at Treadwell Mine office building and we are having some fun.
Yeah, we're having some fun. We're getting bitten by mosquitoes, all that good stuff. Ed Littlefield doing the sound for this production. He was just in town recently as part of Bamua, playing last weekend during the Ok Rock mini concerts. And that was really awesome. So it's really great to have Ed doing the sound on this show. And so, Floridolino, how did this project, Pride and Prejudice, come about? This is like the fourth time you have done a full play in the summer, right?
Yeah.
And you've done some other plays throughout the winter, but like in the summertime, there's always a play. It's usually been Shakespeare. So where did Pride and Prejudice come from?
Yeah, like four years ago, actually, I mentioned this play because like we're company members and we like look for plays for different company members. And this is one of the plays that I looked at with Christina, who is playing Lizzie. And she directed a reading of it and played Lizzie 2 years ago, and which many of the people around in the room here were, except for Brian.
Yes,
and
that was not there.
That was done on a Juno Community Foundation grant.
Yes,
and so
the reading was
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and so that kind of planted the seed.
Yeah.
In our brains.
Yeah, and so I think that we've kind of fell in love with it. I think the audience has really enjoyed it as well. You know, some of the performances by people around the room, including this person playing Mrs. Bennett.
I don't know who that is.
Mrs. Bennett, Boston Christopher, playing Mrs. Bennett. It's just hysterical, but it's just a really good story about love and from a woman's perspective, which is really great.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I remember getting the email for the reading and they're like, yeah, we want you to play Mrs. Bennett in this reading. And I was like, are you Mr. Bennett? And they're like,
A misspelling.
Mrs. Bennett. And I was like, oh, well, that's such an interesting challenge, right? So it's really fun. There is some other actors in the play who are playing various different people. Enrique Bravo plays a couple different roles, including one of your sisters,
Mary.
And so let's talk about who you all play. So Christina, you're playing.
So I'm playing Lizzie Bennett.
Elizabeth
Bennett. And just to give a little bit of maybe background, right? We've got the Bennett family, and in the novel, there are five daughters in this family, and they all need to be married off, because if they aren't married off to good husbands, then their family will go into ruin. And so in this version, it's been reduced to four.
There's four sisters.
Five's just too many.
That's five's too many.
So I play the second oldest sister, Lizzie Bennett, and she is the protagonist. And she gets to go through a journey of self-discovery and love, all buoyed by her family.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about more of the differences in the play versus what people may know from the book or the movies in just a bit. But Natalia, who are you playing?
I'm playing primarily Jane Bennett, who's the eldest Bennett daughter and therefore has the responsibility to get married very quickly, hopefully before the rest of her sisters. I also play Mr. Berg, who is a more minor character in the novel. Something that's really fun about this production is that most of the
actors, not Christina and not the actor playing Darcy, but everyone else plays at least two roles. And some people play more than two roles.
I think the actor to your right.
The actor to my right is one of them.
In the play, I think. So, and Brian, who do you play? Because you play three roles, which is, I think, the most in the play.
Yeah, it is. I'm playing Miss Bingley, who's the sibling of Mr. Bingley. And she is a very, she thinks very highly of herself. She's very elevated. The elevation might not be quite grounded in reality, but she really thinks very highly of herself. And so it's a very fun character to play, very physical. Trying to find the physicalities of the character, of all the characters, has been a lot of fun work, and figuring out how all the lines sit in their bodies and how to make each individual character really kind of pop. And the other characters that I am playing, Mr. Cullens, is a somewhat shallow, pedantic, a little bit of a pervy guy. he is very energetic, and he is on a mission to find a wife. And hopefully that will come across in the play when you see it.
Yes, I think it will.
You can't miss it.
And the final character I'm playing is Wickham, who is a charming man who was brought up with Darcy, who is an interest of Lizzie's that I am aware of, and I was brought up in the same household as him, and I feel somewhat spurned by some things that happened over the course of growing up with that family. You'll find out more about that in the play as well, about the details, but in essence, I'm trying to compete with Darcy for Elizabeth's affection and her love, and kind of, you know, take it to him and show him that, you know, I can also step up and basically put him in his place that he's in.
So, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to watch that. I mean, it's an interesting challenge to I'm lucky in that I also play multiple characters, but the multiple characters that I play, I just play a servant is my other role. So it's just a servant.
It's amazing.
But it's a lot of fun. It's an interesting challenge to watch that process. So Fleur-de-Lino, you mentioned that, you know, the play is about love. It's about the gamemanship of love. Yeah. It's all about all these different aspects. And what I'm curious about is what this play, it sort of even says on the back of the script, like, this is not your grandma's Pride and Prejudice. Why is that the sort of tagline for this play?
You know, it's like funny. I saw this play at a theater down south, you know, a really good theater. And I remember just like wanting to fall asleep during it. It's like it's a story that sometimes is told, which I, you know, reading the novel, it's a very funny novel, actually. But sometimes it's told in kind of a staid kind of, you know, this is British theater, you know, like, you know,
like you're masterpiece
theater.
Yeah.
And so she,
wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with masterpiece theater. I like masterpiece.
I grew up
theater.
On it. So I did too. I have to like,
this is the NPR affiliate.
I know.
PBS.
This is nothing. So, yeah. Down to now, Abby, I've watched all of this. Anyways, but I think that, I think that having the eight characters is like or eight actors playing all the different characters is a big part of it. And I think Kate also wrote it for downtown New York theater. Mm. So it's, you know, like she doesn't have like lots of sets. She didn't have lots of, you know, like a mansion. She wasn't worried about that. She was just mostly worried about the acting and how they responded to each other, and just played with a lot of hijinks and a lot of fun. The actors that she first had in the first production are actually at OSF. They are a couple of them are one of their main comedians that they have down at OSF. So as it has, it's kind of instilled in that in this product and in the words and in the way that it's been produced in the past. This kind of sense of hilarity and fun and trying to just have a good time telling a story.
Yeah, it's like fast paced. Yeah. It just cooks along. Obviously, there's things that aren't from the book, obviously, that will be in this. There are probably things in this that aren't in the movies. There's different ways that the story is told for, you know, theatrical purposes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, does it fit the model of Theater Alaska? Because what Theater Alaska does is perform out in the community. This play will be at various different locations around town. A couple weeks at the Treadwell office out at Sandy Beach. Mm-hmm. And then the different places. Yeah. Pioneer Home, Jensen Olsen Arboretum, the Noise Pavilion,
And so it's going to be transferring into different spaces. And does the sort of the way she wrote it, sort of it, does it lend itself to that kind of production?
Definitely. I think that it just really just it fits us to a T, I think. So it's a fun thing to take on. And I think that for us at Theatre Alaska, we really think about the actors and they come first. And so like having all of you in the room together and watching you play and like learn new things about the characters every day, I think that's exciting.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So for you, Natalia, like what's been sort of the most challenging aspect of working on this? Because you've worked with Theatre Alaska for the last couple summers. You've have you done every play that they have done in the summer?
Pretty much every play, actual performance I have done, yes.
But you are not a company member.
I'm not a company member.
Interesting.
Somehow I was able to sneak in.
I'm not sure what the benefits are of being a company member.
No.
But I'm just joking. But like, but how is this process compared to working on sort of the Shakespeare plays that you've mostly been doing?
Yeah, you know, it's different. With Shakespeare, you have so much freedom to kind of stage it really however you want. You can do a lot of editing of the script. We've always gotten the plays down to like 90 minutes in the last 3 years. And you're able to kind of set it whenever you want. There's a lot of fluidity with a Shakespeare that when you have a play that is written so specifically, like this play is written, we can't really be editing it. We can't really be taking out scenes just because we would like to move quicker. It's a very quick play. It doesn't need it anyway. but this is like a very, very comedic play. And we've done comedies in the past, but there's a lot of specificity in this play that's required an attention to detail that is different from the attention to detail that you would attack a Shakespeare with.
Interesting.
Example.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And can you also, Natalia, just tell us who else is in the play? Because we didn't mention the rest. There's four of us here in the room. There's four other actors.
Half the cast is here in the room. Yeah. So the cast that is not in the room right now, Tara Stark is playing Charlotte Lucas and Mr. Bennett. Kristen Rankin is playing Lydia and Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Matthew Myrick is playing Mr. Darcy. And Enrique Bravo is playing Mr. Bingley and Mary Bennett.
And most of those names might be familiar, except for Matthew Myrick. Tell us a little bit about him, Flordelino.
Yeah, Matthew. I went to graduate school at Brown Trinity, and I was like looking for an actor to play Darcy. They're like, "Hey, do you guys have any actors right now in the program that are interested in coming down?" And so, like, yeah, Matthew auditioned for the play, and he's in it, and he's doing a really fabulous job. We're really glad to have him as a part of the production.
That's great. And and Christina, so as you mentioned, you are the protagonist, the story of Lizzie and Darcy and how they get together. And it's very famous. There's been many famous actors who played the role. The scenes between them are very famous. What's it been like to work with Matthew on these scenes and sort of those iconic moments?
That's a big question,
yeah.
Boston.
That's my job.
It's been great. It's fun to work with everybody who's in town, right? Because we know each other and maybe too well sometimes. But it's also great to get somebody from out of town and to welcome them into the company, introduce them to Juno. And doing the scenes, I mean, there are, you know, every second line is like another line from the book. So they are a little bit ingrained in my head, but it's been great. Like there's, in addition to the lines, there's some dancing and some kind of, you know, I don't, no spoiler alerts, but like a little bit of pop music. And Matthew's a really good dancer. And so
that's
been
nice.
A lot of fun.
And Haley Duran has been doing the choreography, which is great.
Right. Yes. Haley's been doing wonderful with that. And so, Flordelino, what about the production elements? What's different about this from the previous ones that you've done?
In terms of
fitting this production into the different spaces, is there something different this time around?
I think that I think maybe it requires just more stuff. It feels like. I mean, I think if we did the Scottish play. Yeah, can I say it on the line?
Not in a theater.
But like we did it like with four chairs. Then we did like Dolls House Part 2. We had like two chairs, I think. We took chairs from every different place. So it's like it's just a little more stuff, I think, that we have to think about.
We have a bench.
We have a bench.
And a chair.
And a chair. I mean, it's not that much more stuff. I mean, it really isn't.
But it really, it allows the audience, and I think this is audience to appreciate this, it allows them to use their imagination. Yeah. Like you mentioned earlier, it focuses on the actors and the language that is in the play. It focuses on the story, right, and all of that. So, well, give us the rundown of the details in terms of when it opens. Who's got those? Who's going to do the details?
I got it.
I have it right here. So our first performance is Wednesday, June 19th at the Treadwell Mine office building. And then we're there all the way through Saturday, June 29th. Which is our final performance there. And then we move to various locations around town, including the Juno Pioneer Home, Riverview Senior Living, Riverside Rotary Park, Jensen Olson Arboretum, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute Heritage Plaza, Mendenhall Valley Public Library, the Noise Pavilion at the University of Alaska Southeast. And all those details can be found at theateralaska.org, theater with an E-R.
And one thing we should mention is that these are all free performances.
Yeah, all free.
And the only one that you need to make a reservation for is the Jensen Olson Arboretum, because it has limited space in terms of them being able to open up their space for this to happen.
Yeah, there are 150 reservations. The reservations now can be made online at theateralaska.org. So just make them right now and come out and see the show. If it doesn't rain that day, we've been lucky this last 2 years. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm saying it.
Why did you just? Why did you just curse us like that?
I'm knocking on wood right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of wood in here.
There's a lot of wood. Okay.
Well, it's great. It's really fun. It's a production of Pride and Prejudice. You know it. You love it. You love these actors. You love this story. It's time to get out and see some summer theater. Yeah. Go ahead, guess, Christina.
Grandmamas are welcome.
Grandmamas are welcome, as are grandpapas. Anybody is welcome to the show. How? I guess that is a question. Like, how young should people be? Is this good for 10 and up, or what
I
do you think?
I think it's totally. It's a family. We're marketing it as a family friendly show. Brian Crowder. So we're going to keep it family friendly.
I'll tone things down.
Yes.
There have been some things that have been cut from the production already. Oh, and I do want to mention also, Flirtalino, before we go, that there is a fundraiser that you're having for Theater Alaska's education programs that's happening this Saturday. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're having it's called Broadway Cabaret, and tickets can again be gotten online at theateralaska.org. We have performers from that performed on Broadway. One of them, Q Smith, did one of the original roles from Come From Away, which is a play that was written about the planes during 9/11 moving to Canada. It was like a really, really beautiful musical. She was one of the original cast members, did it all on Broadway and La Jolla Playhouse, all the good stuff. Other ones are Billy Bustamante, Lawrence Stallings, and also Julian de Guzman. They'll be performing on Saturday at 7 p.m., as well as students from the Theater Alaska summer camps. We're doing summer camp with Juno Dance Theater and Juno Fine Arts Camp, musical theater camp and Shakespeare camp. And some students from that are going to be performing as well. So I just was there this afternoon, and Donnie Gott's one of the teachers. She has their students from the Shakespeare camp. Really beautiful work. And the musical theater camp students are working with Q and with Lawrence are doing really wonderful work. They'll be performing on Saturday as well. But Theater Alaska is doing much more programming for kids. This fall, we're going to be working with Elizabeth Beisel Davis. She's going to be doing a show for young kids as well. So like we're trying to just being able to raise some funds to be able to support the kids.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, everything that most of the things that Theater Alaska does are free to the public. So donations are always welcome when you go to the shows mm-hmm. or on your website or whatever. Right. So it's Pride and Prejudice. It's happening June 19th through July 14th all over town. And you can find out more at theateralaska.org. That's theater with an E-R. Gunath Chi, Salama. Thank you all for coming in today and telling us about this play. And I'll see you at rehearsal in a couple hours. Okay. Up next, we'll get the lowdown on upcoming walks and the ongoing exhibitions at the Juno Douglas City Museum. But first, a savory moment. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Step in to the savory moment. It's not in the stars to hold our destiny, but ourselves. This is an often misquoted line from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, but it makes a point. You are the master of your own fate. But what if some days you just don't want the responsibility, especially when it comes to dinner? You want someone or something, the stars, your kids, the radio, to just tell you what to cook. The next time you're looking for an assist, stop by your local coffee shop. You know, the one with the take one, leave one shelf of used books. After you get your coffee, grab the first cookbook you see. There's always at least one. Close your eyes, pick a page, and point. Now, look down. Today, the book in your hands is the New York Times Natural Foods Cookbook by Jean Hewitt, published in 1982. Never heard of it. The recipe beneath your fingertip? Blender potato pancakes. Okay, a weird version of latkes maybe, but wow, this recipe is so easy. Throw potatoes, an egg yolk, and salt in a blender. Cook according to instructions. That would be folding beaten egg whites into the blended mixture and ladling onto a hot skillet. Then serve with your favorite toppings. For you, the stars say applesauce and sour cream. Pair with any green vegetable and you've got dinner. But be warned, this dinner date with destiny technique is not for the faint of heart. Next time you might grab a cookbook and open your eyes to a turducken. So what did Shakespeare actually write in Act 1, Scene 2 of Julius Caesar? The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Bottom line, you're still going to be the one making dinner. Find the full recipe for blender potato pancakes at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short-Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Idi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hands and grass, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na khaya ha an ka gun cheese.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time now for our regular check-in with the City Museum. Joining me, as always, Kay Ross! Hi, Kate.
Hi, Boston. I'll take that. I'll just walk into a room, get like the applause
get
noise.
Get applause, sure.
I'm not mad at it.
It's all good. So how's it going? How's the summer so far at the museum?
Good. It's been good. It's been steady but busy. We've had a lot of visitors off the ships and independent travelers and some locals bringing their family in, people that have people visiting. So yeah, it's been a great start to the summer.
It seems like there's been a lot of boats so far. Uh-huh. We're just into mid-June, but it seems like there have been a lot of people downtown. And so I'm thinking that they do make their way up towards the City Museum.
Yeah, a fair number do. I think it depends a little bit on the weather.
Right.
You know, if it's really too stormy, sometimes we don't get quite as many people. But then sometimes people want to get away out of the storm and come look at some art and artifacts for a while. So, it's been good. And I think it's only going to get busier. And so, yeah.
And though, so the summertime obviously means that we're out walking a little bit more, and the City Museum has tons of walks and things that are scheduled. Tell us about what we have for walks.
We do. Yeah, that's something that's really cool that we offer in the summer, is there's a number of different walking tours that we do, as well as tours of the Capitol. So the Capitol, if you have anyone visiting, that is a free tour that people can do. They don't need to sign up ahead of time. But that is all every weekdays. There's a couple in the afternoon. That's just at the state capitol there. And then Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursday afternoons, we have a historic downtown Juneau walking tour. And all of our walking tours are led by volunteers. So even if you think you know some of the history of downtown, depending on who the volunteer is, they might have some little nuggets of information that you don't know. So I always recommend that for anyone that has visiting family, just kind of a way for people to stroll around, get a different perspective on things. And then we have our specialty walking tours as well.
Oh, and what are those?
So we have a few different ones. We have a Treadwell Mine walking tour. The next one will be in July. And we have one coming up on Saturday, this Saturday, that somehow still has spots open.
Oh.
It's the Downtown Juneau Geology Tour. And we're pretty excited about this one. We have...
Is this a newer one, or has it happened before?
It's happened before. It's kind of happened off and on with different people's availability, but it's only offered once a month. Hmm. And so, you know, since it's a more limited time and there's only a certain number of slots, you know, available. It's not super, super often that it happens. But yeah, those are led by Dr. Kathy Connor, who was a professor of geology out at UAS, and naturalist Richard Karstensen.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one that I'm looking forward to taking. I don't think I can do it this Saturday, but at some point I hope to.
Yeah, for sure.
Because being a little bit of a science nerd myself, and also loving the history of Juneau and the old timey buildings and everything else, it's really interesting to see or hear about and learn more about how the landscape has changed and the geology through mining and development and all the rest of that.
And where does that one take place?
So that one starts from the museum. Most of our walking tours start from the museum.
Okay.
And it just walks all through downtown Juneau, pointing out different geological features and history of the area.
That's so interesting, because obviously over time, you know, things shift and change and morph. And I was just talking with somebody from the Tongass, from the USDA agriculture, you know, and talking about the Tongass forest and just how everything changes and morphs over time, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see like what the geologists would say about that.
Right, exactly. Like we have in our little entranceway lobby at the museum, we have some old, old photos of kind of the downtown area and showing from, you know, 100, 200 years ago what that shoreline looked like compared to now. Mm-hmm. And it's remarkably different. I mean, a lot of locals may know, but a lot of people, if you didn't grow up here, might not know that much of downtown is built on fill. It used to be, I mean, there used to not be this much land downtown, right? I mean, we know here being at KTOO on these studios,
you know, on
these tide flats.
Yeah. So we say that in our land acknowledgement
exactly,
all the time. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So getting that, you know, type of information from these really, really knowledgeable folks is, I think, a very, very interesting lens to view.
Wow.
To view our history.
All right. And then do we have other walks that are coming up?
Yeah. Well, the next Treadwell Mine one, I forgot to write down the date. It's in July.
Okay. But you can find this all at juneau.org/museum.
You can indeed. And then we do have a couple more of the Evergreen Cemetery tours as well. And those are really, really interesting.
Is that the ones by Betsy and Ed?
No. Those are not. I don't think they're doing any with us this summer.
Okay.
They're led by Jim Baldwin. And they go from the museum to the cemetery. And he has all sorts of information on a lot of the interesting people people who are buried there. Ooh. So it's not quite like a, you know, grisly true crime type vibe. It's more history, anthropological history. But it's really interesting to hear some of the stories of people that lived here a long, long time ago.
Wow, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. You just get that history. Okay, and then we also want to mention the exhibits that are going on, mm-hmm. the exhibitions. What do we have that's playing over the summer and all of that?
Yeah, so we are continuing with our mini exhibit of Switch and Exchange, Brief History of Telephones in Juneau. So that one has some really cool artifacts. And actually, if you came to the opening of that a few months ago, a newer thing that we have now is we have the original switchboard from the Alaskan Hotel.
Oh, wow.
Like big, giant, hulking piece of old technology.
Is it the thing where you plug in yeah. different cords?
Yeah, you plug the cords into the different things, just like you would think from a stereotypical old movie of like, operator, giver number three.
20567.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was actually donated to the museum after someone came and saw that exhibit opening and said, wow. Oh, actually, I think I have this old switchboard.
It's like in my garage.
Yeah, no, it literally was, was off on someone's property. And so that's a really cool addition to that exhibit. And then continuing through all summer, all the way through October 19th, is a Yehkuwu Atki Ka Shade Nachki Yan Sakji Yis, Raven's Tale Regalia for Future Leaders.
Very well done. Woof.
Yeah. I have been working on that one, let me tell you.
It's a long title.
It's a long title, and I please forgive my pronunciation as I am still learning. But that is the Raven's Tale weaving a lot of the child-sized robes woven under the mentorship of Lily Hope, as well as the Hands Across Time robe, full-size robe, which is just absolutely incredible to see. If any of you saw the Sway exhibit at the Alaska State Museum a few years ago, that was one of the robes featured in that. So just being able to see that Yehkuwu up close, and it's just so stunning. And to hear and learn a little bit more about the history behind all of that is just incredible.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
And then lastly, we want to mention that you also have normally in the winters, like for Juneau residents, the museum is free. It's mm-hmm. summertime now, so we got to make a little money.
Yeah.
but there's still opportunities to see these things at no cost during mm-hmm. First Friday. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, absolutely. So every First Friday, we will have free admission from 4 to 6 p.m. So that next one is July 5th, and then in August and September as well. So it is not free the rest of the time, but free for everyone, 4 to 6 First Fridays, a great opportunity to come check out our exhibits. And also our admission fee is only $7 and $6 for seniors, and kids 12 and under are free. So it's really, we keep it pretty reasonable and try to keep it accessible for people to come. It's a great place to bring family members or anyone who might be visiting, get a good history of the area.
And I love your place because you know how a lot of museums, you go through it and then the last thing you do is you end up in the gift shop. Your gift shop is right there at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
so
incorporated
listen,
into
if
it.
You need to come shop for souvenirs, I've brought a lot of wonderful things in. We have some great local artists. And
you still have the stickers and stuff? The stickers.
We do. We still have the stickers that were commissioned from some local artists from Cluckshaw, Chloe Kavanaugh from Black and White Raven Co. We have one that she created. We have one from Junie Chup and one from Claire Scott. Those are on, one is the Harnessing of the Atom Totem. One is Patsy Ann and one is Romeo the Wolf. And we have a number of other local artists. We're about to have Christine Kleinhentz have a little section there.
Oh, nice.
And so that'll be fun to get some of that from Tide Watcher. And yeah, lots of fun stuff. It's a great little spot. Come check us out.
Go check it out at the museum. It's the Juneau Douglas City Museum. Kate Ross, Gunnith Cheesh for coming in today. Juneau.org/museum for all of the information. That will do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we will learn about a new podcast, Pretendians, which exposes Indigenous identity fraud, plus a look at the new Sea Alaska Heritage Multilingual Online Dictionary with audio, and Mom's Unhinged Comedy Show happening Friday night at Centennial Hall. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. on our summer schedule right here on KTOO, Juno 104.3 in KAUK, Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening. Bye.